Welcome to The Roundup, a North Queensland-based podcast with regional content for regional clinicians. I'm Alyssa Hathaway, a GP and family planning clinician and head of JCU's clinical school here in Mackay. This collaborative podcasting project between North Queensland Regional Training Hubs, JCU, and our local regional hospital and health services will bring you a different regionally relevant podcast each fortnight. Before we begin, I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands where we meet today, who were the original providers of healthcare in this region. In today's episode, I'm joined by Dr. Alok Rana, who is a psychiatrist with a particular interest in geriatric depression, who works in both the public and private system in the Mackay region. Welcome, Alok.
Thanks, Alyssa. That's very kind of you to invite me to join your podcast series, which has been very popular with our medical colleagues and students in North Queensland area.
I'm really pleased that you're happy to talk to us about geriatric depression because it is sometimes a real clinical conundrum, isn't it? Can you tell us about the prevalence of depression in the elderly population?
Prevalence of depression in elderly population has been widely quoted in different publications according to the place they have been sort of evaluated. For example, in general, the normal prevalence, what everybody agrees, is somewhere between 10 to 15%, but it could range anything from 5% to 20% in community. When we look at the literature to look at prevalence in some specific settings, like hospital settings or residential aged care facilities, which also known as nursing homes, especially in their first year of staying in the nursing home, the geriatric depression can be seen in up to 40 or up to even 50% of that population. At times, maybe undiagnosed, and other times it's diagnosed but not treated in time. So it's a huge problem overall worldwide as well as within Australia.
Oh, that's an enormous number of potential patients, isn't it? Now, when we're thinking about depression in the elderly population, are we using the same kind of criteria to diagnose it as we would in other members of the population?
Yes, so that's probably an issue that there are no separate criteria for geriatric depression. So we use the same DSM criteria or ICD criteria as we would diagnose in younger population. But as we know that in older population, there is a reluctance and hesitancy in seeking help or even accepting or acknowledging that they have been struggling with mental health issues. That may be bit of cultural thing in some places, but that may be generational issue as well, not showing it as a sign of weakness, basically. Also, when younger people present with depression, they are much more clearly evident, as there would be a big change in their ability to function or to carry out their job or studies. So it would be much easier to pick up, while older people, especially if they live in isolation or if they have been gradually getting frailer and also getting cognitive impaired, then it would be very difficult for even the family members who have been staying with them to identify that they may need help with their mental health.
And are these patients going to describe their mood disorder a little bit differently then than younger people? It sounds like they're not going to come in saying, I'm really sad or I'm depressed. What are some of the phrases that they're likely to use, Alok?
Yeah, so that probably is one of the key things to sort of pick up whether they may be experiencing mental health issues, especially depression in that age group. Most of the people in that age group population usually have got other issues going in their life. So, for example, a lot of people may be experiencing other physical health illnesses or chronic illnesses or new diagnosis of, for example, a new cancer or stroke or TIA. So a lot of time, these things can kind of take over as the immediate need. But also, these could be the risk factor for them to sort of make it worse if they already have some low mood or depression going on because of the change in circumstances. Also, when we talked about people who are in hospital or in aged care facilities, as they have recently relocated, so a lot of the time they are into a new environment where people don't know what their baseline is or what would they look like otherwise. So it is very difficult for the new staff member, either in the hospital or in the aged care facility, to pick on that. And even the family members struggle with that. A lot of time family would think that they are there for some other reason. So that may be the reason, whatever the initial medical presentation or initial change of circumstances, that may be the reason that they are not to themselves. A lot of people do present with physical symptoms which are not there. For example, they may be fatigued, or they may talk about tired or having aches and pains. And this can be just easily missed out, not looking at the mental health side, unless very late in their presentation when everything else has been tried. So that probably give you a bit of answer to that, but there could be a lot more difficult or different presentations to some people in their own circumstances, especially in areas when they have lost their immediate family member or a spouse or a brother or sister they were close to. And at times, grief can overshadow the depression.
Okay, so we need to have a high degree of suspicion then for depression in the elderly population because it's so prevalent and can be really difficult to diagnose. So we're going to be thinking about grief, thinking about concomitant illnesses like cancers or stroke. We need to be checking with the family or the carers for that collateral history, maybe to see if there has been a big change in function, and be mindful that a complaint of physical signs or symptoms like fatigue or aches and pains might actually be a mental health concern and not actually something physical. Okay, so Dr. Rana, when we are seeing these patients, how are we going to best be treating them?
The key to the successful treatment and management of their mental health issues and depression is early identification of these symptoms and get a diagnosis early on. And as we know that in GP land, in primary care, the time is quite essence, and sometimes it's quite difficult when they present with multiple comorbidities, especially the physical comorbidities, to get these symptoms undone in their first visit to the GPs. So a lot of the time, I think I would usually rely on the collateral we receive from the family members. We try to sort of find out how they have been functioning and whether there have been any recent change in the functioning of the person, especially the things they used to enjoy. So a lot of patients would present with change of their daily routine or loss of hobbies they were going before, loss of the friend circle and getting a bit more socially isolated, or maybe just complaining some non-specific issues now and then repeatedly without seeking help for that. So those are the key things which we can ask if the family member is present. I know it's a difficult thing when you are sort of seeing the person and how much you can rely on the family, but definitely this is one of the things which is helpful in my own practice. So I would recommend that to all the primary care practitioners, including the nurses who may be more in contact for their regular checkups. If you go into the hospital settings, I always ask the staff in the hospital to liaise with the family as well as liaise with their GP so that they can get a bit more idea of how and how long they have been presenting with similar non-specific symptoms if they continue to present in the hospital. So hopefully that these are the key things which may be able to give us a bit of idea that what we can do. I think there's the next thing is that whether we can do some kind of screening for these patients, which will help us to identify these symptoms early on.
Do you have an easy screening tool for us, Alok?
There are quite a lot of screening tools which we use in younger population. Those screening tools, if you are well versed, that these can be used. Like we use PHQ-9 in primary care, or we use DAS. But there are specific screening tools for geriatric depression, and it's very easy to remember because it's called Geriatric Depression Scale, GDS.
Okay.
So definitely, I would recommend that if we have been seeing a significant proportion of geriatric population in our practice, then maybe getting well versed with geriatric depression scale. There is a smaller version, there is a full version, but 99% of the time we use the briefer version, which is 15-point scale. Takes around 10 minutes to 15 minutes. The patient can complete it, and once we start getting used to of that, it's much easier because any score above 5 would indicate that they need to be assessed for a geriatric depression.
Okay, so if we assess the patient using the geriatric depression scale, ideally the brief one that takes 10 minutes, that sounds fantastic, or we're just using the DAS 21 or any of those other screening tools, and the patient is scoring in the depressed range, can we feel confident starting an SSRI, for example, for treatment, and then engaging with psychological therapies if we can access them?
Yes, I think we still follow the same guidance as we follow in the younger population that try to go for the first line medication. SSRIs are namely the first line treatment for any population, any age group population. The only thing probably as a tip I can talk about before using SSRI or prescribing SSRI is to check the sodium level. Because which that is the most common issue which may worsen the hyponatremia again with the use of SSRIs. Apart from that, I think unless there are significant issues, we should go ahead with the first line treatment. In elderly population, I also recommend to consider using mirtazapine even in primary setting as the first line because a lot of people in that age group may present with loss of appetite or loss of weight, as well as lack of sleep. And mirtazapine does help with those two as side effect, but does help the population in getting better. And sleep is one of the key things which I notice in most age group, but more so in elderly population, that once they start getting better sleep pattern and their regular routine of the sleep-wake cycle, they start getting better level of their happy hormones, the serotonin levels start getting better. So those two, SSRI and mirtazapine, are easy to start even in primary settings or in hospital setting without seeking a specialist consultation if we are sure that they are going through a depressive episode at this point in time.
Sure. And of course, if the patient's not responding then to our first line treatments, we can always refer on to someone like yourself, I'm sure. Now, Alok, are psychological therapies useful in the geriatric population, or is it on a case-by-case basis?
So psychological therapy are important in all age group, but the way we know the psychological therapy work in younger population is probably different from the way we use psychological therapy in elderly population. And again, when we talk about the elderly population, this is not a homogeneous group. So when I talk as an old age psychiatrist, I divide them my younger older people and my older people. And as a rough estimate, I say somebody who is below 75 or maybe up to 80 within like good health, good cognition, they would probably benefit by having the similar sort of psychological therapy as a younger patient, most likely with like CBT or more psychological grounding, or at times there are other interpersonal therapies can be used. But for older people and people who have got cognitive impairment, even in with younger age group, they may not be able to get benefit or get engaged into typical psychological therapies. And they would benefit by what we call supportive psychotherapy. So basically, rather than working on like cognition or thinking, as you would do in the younger population, you would look into providing the psychological support, involving the family members, helping them to understand what they're going through, and providing psychoeducation to the person as well as the family members. So that's also a kind of a psychological intervention or more of a psychosocial intervention, but it has been much more effective than just using the medication in itself without having other psychosocial support or interventions.
That's really interesting. Now, Alok, you did mention cognitive impairment there. Of course, we do need to be mindful that we're treating a patient for depression and that it's not a presentation of a dementia pattern, or is it simply a symptom of a delirium kind of state? Is it very difficult to tease out which one is the primary problem sometimes in these patients?
I think that's a very interesting point you have raised, and which can be quite complicated for a lot of people, even for specialists in the hospital setting. I mean to say other specialists apart from the mental health, as these patients with depression may present or may mimic dementia. As you know, depression can affect the thinking. It can affect your ability to recall because slowing of thinking and slowing of cognition. And there is a term for that. If it is primarily depression, which is causing the cognitive impairment, we call it pseudodementia, or more specifically, we call it depressive pseudodementia. So dementia or depression, which is mimicking dementia in that way. When we try to sort of identify whether it is depression or a new diagnosis of dementia is there, we really need to look at a bit of longitudinal history to see when these symptoms started, also the past psychiatric or mental health history, whether they had depression before, and how this has actually progressed over the years, and whether they had any treatment or benefit from trying any medication or treatment options before. So usually what I teach medical students or the registrars in mental health is that we usually need to look at the temporal relationship. So drawing a timeline and starting putting all the symptoms. And that gives us a bit of an idea whether the primary issue was depression as it started before they start getting memory impairment, or whether they start having cognitive impairment for some time and now because they can't recall, they are losing independence, they are feeling depressed. And it is interesting to know for our audience that these two are risk factor for each other. So people who have got a diagnosis of depression throughout their life, they are at risk of developing dementia or cognitive impairment, while people who has a recent diagnosis of dementia and progressing over a period of time, they are at risk of developing depression, even if they haven't had depression before. So we need to really tease that out. The other thing what you mentioned about was the third D out of the three Ds is delirium. That is much more applicable in hospital settings where people can present with other issues along with depression and or cognitive impairment. With acute infection or a recent TIA or a recent change in the circumstances, which maybe a new diagnosis of a cancer or stroke or multiple sclerosis or Parkinson's. And in those circumstances, at times they may have other issues like acute kidney injury or dehydration in that population is quite common. So they may present with acute confusional state or delirium, which by definition, it's something which start very suddenly or very acutely. And usually it's treatable or manageable just by sort of resolving the underlying cause, giving them a bit of support, not doing too much around that time, and treating them for the underlying infection or whatever the cause was. So in hospital setting, it is quite difficult, and we always advise for using some delirium screening tools, which are basically also helpful to rule out, not rule out, but to see that whether there may be a cognitive component to that, or it could just delirium. But even using those tools, they don't help with the diagnosis of depression. So we have to really wait till the delirium settles down to review and assess the mental health to make a new diagnosis of depression. So usually I advise most of my medical colleagues in the general hospital setting to wait and watch, and doing less intervention during that time, which might actually make them to experience the delirium for a prolonged period, especially any sedative medications like benzodiazepine or antipsychotics or sedative antidepressants.
Right. So, Alok, we're going to be confident to introduce an SSRI to these patients when we suspect it's just depression based on our geriatric depression scale. We're going to be checking the kidney function for hyponatremia, and we might be adding in mirtazapine or using mirtazapine alone because that's particularly good for their appetite and sleep. We're going to be introducing psychological therapies like we do for any other person with depression, but being mindful that the older geriatric population might need more of those psychosocial interventions rather than cognitive behavioral therapy or interpersonal therapy, which might be suitable for the younger geriatric population. That will be interesting to try and differentiate. And then, of course, with our depressed patients, we need to be mindful of dementia and of delirium. And for those dementing, those patients who might be experiencing dementia, we're looking particularly at the temporal relationship, the timeline between their depression features and their other aspects of cognitive impairment. I think it's great to be thinking about the risk factors for geriatric depression and for dementia, isn't it? So you've mentioned that they are a risk factor for each other. Are there any other risk factors for geriatric depression that we need to be mindful of, do you think, Alok?
Yes. So when we look at the geriatric population, there are the risk factors which are there for younger population. So people who have got history of depression before, they are more likely to experience another bout of depression in circumstances where things may not go their way, and they might feel more stressed or triggered by these change in circumstances. People who have got a family history of depression or mood disorder, they need to be screened for that as well. A lot of people who have experienced comorbid physical illnesses or comorbid multiple physical illnesses in recent years may go through a phase of depression and may be easy to treat, because usually this is more reactive depression in those circumstances. One of the common things we look at, we just spoke about, is if they are going through bereavement and grief and they are not able to manage that within expected time frame, which is usually between 3 and up to 6 months, then definitely that's the time period we need to be looking at screening for depression. There are medications. People may be on multiple medication, and sometime some of these medication may start interfering or interfering with each other. And a lot of people who may not get used to of being on so many medication, at times I have noticed that they would react to that either through a mixed anxiety and depression, or maybe a depressive episode in itself. When we look at other risk factors which are there in younger population with psychosocial stressors within the family dynamics, older population are probably more prone to not get support in their own ways, as they may be not physically and mentally capable of asking for help if there's family dynamics going against them, or they may be a bit reluctant to actually talk to other people about that if it is their own family members like children or other people who may be in some kind of conflict or dispute, which is quite common, more common than we think happens to a lot of older people, leading to these depressive episodes or symptoms. And therefore, we always need to sort of look at a bit more holistic picture where we look at their place of living, their network of support, their stressors, and how they are going to deal with that, what support system is in place. And as previously mentioned, if they have moved, either they have moved from one place to other to be near to their children or other family members, they struggle in accepting and changing themselves. Or if they move to hospital for a chronic illness where they have to stay a bit longer period, or going into a nursing home or a residential aged care facilities, that also can bring on these episode of depression, especially in those vulnerable people. So I hope that covers a lot of the factors which we see commonly.
Most definitely. Now, Alok, is there anything else we need to be thinking of in depression in our geriatric population?
I think, as you mentioned, that when things may go worse and either they are having severe depression or depression with sort of overized with some kind of psychotic symptoms, or they stopped eating, drinking, or present with other comorbid mental health issues like anxiety or some kind of psychosis or cognitive impairment, I think that is the time definitely to seek a specialist opinion. In Mackay, I am available both in private and the public sector, and there are pathways to refer. Also, I am quite happy in local in Mackay to be at the end of the phone to support our primary practitioners or residential aged care facilities to help them to know what to do next, whether it's a change of medication or needing a full review from a specialist. And similar services are available in most areas, even in most regional areas like Townsville and Cairns in North Queensland and rest of the country. So definitely looking at what is locally available to your area and seeking specialist help or sending a referral to the relevant services is very helpful. One of the other thing probably in elderly population is as they get older, frailer, they may need some support. So they may need some guidance around how they can access support. There is a My Aged Care portal Australia-wide, which can be accessed online or via phone. And that creates another issue that if they are on their own, not having any younger age group, family, relative, or children around, they may struggle with the online application. And even with the phone, at times it could be quite tricky. So they may need support with that. But once that is done, usually, aged care team do an assessment and sort of advise them what level of support they may need from level one to level four, and also help them to direct towards creating a care package or support system for the people who don't have immediate family to support them, or whose needs are beyond that support from immediate family members. Apart from that, I think we need to really look into if they are in hospital setting or in aged care setting, seeking the support from the relevant professionals who are either working in those settings or visiting those settings. And there are few services who are very much geared towards the older population, and they are much more well-versed with the resources around. I think previously we talked about what can be done in the community as well. So there are resources in community, like there is a University of Third Age, which is basically a low-cost service provided to older people where they can join different kind of groups or activities. So these activities may vary from simple like walking or meeting for a social purpose for a cup of coffee, to there are specific services for people who have got interests like in gardening or woodwork or painting, drawing, craft, knitting, etc. And it's, I think it used to be the $10 a month, so very cheap. And you could always find something local to you and which you may be interested to you. Apart from providing the opportunity to do participate in activity, it's also a bit of a social gathering and social networking for these people. And also getting the peer support from people who are experiencing similar issues, which has been very helpful. And they may start getting more network around what other resources are available within the local areas. So I think there probably that covers what the basic support system people may get access to.
Oh, look, that's a lot of suggestions for people in regional areas. That's fantastic. And particularly that My Aged Care package, it's always changing, isn't it? But it is quite difficult for the elderly population to navigate the website. I find it difficult to navigate the website and providing support for our patients and their families to make sure they're getting the services that they are entitled to is incredibly important. Now, Alok, thank you so much for your time today. We really appreciate you talking about geriatric depression. We'll add in some links to today's podcast for that geriatric depression scale, the University of the Third Age, and I think everybody is familiar with My Aged Care. Dr. Alok Rana, psychiatrist in the Mackay region with a particular interest in geriatric depression. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks, Alyssa, for inviting me, and I hope to come back and maybe we can talk about a bit more on cognitive impairment and dementia in next podcast.
Fantastic idea. Thank you, Alok. We'll talk to you then.
Yes, thank you.
For more information about the Roundup or to share your feedback and ideas for future episodes, visit nqrth.edu.au/roundup-podcast or contact us at nqrth.mackay@jcu.edu.au. We also want to advise that the views and opinions presented in this podcast are those of the speaker only and do not represent the views and opinions of James Cook University, Northern Queensland Regional Training Hubs, or Queensland Health. The content supplied in this podcast is not intended as medical advice and is for educational and entertainment purposes only. Northern Queensland Regional Training Hubs is an initiative of the Australian Government's Integrated Rural Training Pipeline and is facilitated by James Cook University in partnership with public and private hospitals, Queensland Aboriginal and Islander Health Council, health services, Aboriginal community controlled health organisations, and general practice clinics.